Chapter 19. Broken Engagement. Bridget heard Luke drive up. She came out on the steps to meet him. She said without preamble, "I've told him." "What?" Luke was taken aback. His dismay was so patent that Bridget noticed it. "Luke, what is it? You seem quite upset." He said slowly, "I thought we agreed to wait until I came back."
"I know, but I thought it was better to get it over. He was making plans for our marriage, our honeymoon and all that. I simply had to tell him," she added with a touch of reproach in her voice. "It was the only decent thing to do."
He acknowledged it. "From your point of view, yes. Oh yes, I see that.
From every point of view, I should have thought,"
Luke said slowly. "There are times when one can't afford decency."
"Luke, what do you mean?"
He made an impatient gesture. "I can't tell you now and here. How did Whitfield take it?" Bridget said slowly,
"Extraordinarily well. Really, extraordinarily well." I felt ashamed. I believe, Luke, that I've underestimated Gordon, just because he's rather pompous and occasionally futile. I believe he's really rather, well, a great little man.
Luke nodded. "Yes, possibly he is a great man, in ways we haven't suspected. Look here, Bridget, you must get out of here as soon as possible."
"Oh, naturally, I shall pack up my things and leave today. You might drive me up to town. I suppose we could both go and stay at the Bells and Motley. That is, if the Ellsworthy contingent have left."
Luke shook his head. "No, you'd better go back to London. I'll explain presently. In the meantime, I suppose I'd better see Whitfield."
"I suppose it's the thing to do. It's all rather beastly, isn't it? I feel such a rotten little gold digger."
Luke smiled at her. "It was a fair enough bargain. You'd have played straight with him. Anyway, it's no use lamenting over things that are past and done with. I'll go in and see Whitfield now." He found Lord Whitfield striding up and down the drawing room. He was outwardly calm. There was even a slight smile on his lips, but Luke noticed that a pulse in his temple was beating furiously. He wheeled round as Luke entered.
"Oh, there you are, Fitzwilliam,"
Luke said. "It's no good my saying I'm sorry for what I've done. That would be hypocritical. I admit that from your point of view, I've behaved badly, and I've very little to say in defense. These things happen." Lord Whitfield resumed his pacing.
"Quite, quite,"
he waved a hand. Luke went on, "Bridget and I have treated you shamefully, but there it is. We care for each other, and there's nothing to be done about it, except to tell you the truth and clear out." Lord Whitfield stopped. He looked at Luke with pale, protuberant eyes.
"No," he said, "there's nothing you can do about it."
There was a very curious tone in his voice. He stood looking at Luke, gently shaking his head as though in commiseration. Luke said sharply, "What do you mean?"
"There's nothing you can do," said Lord Whitfield. "It's too late."
Luke took a step nearer him. "Tell me what you mean," Lord Whitfield said unexpectedly.
"Ask Honoria Wainfleet. She'll understand. She knows what happens. She spoke to me about it once."
"What does she understand?"
Lord Whitfield said, "Evil doesn't go unpunished. There must be justice." "I'm sorry, because I'm fond of Bridget. In a way, I'm sorry for you both,"
Luke said. "Are you threatening us?" Lord Whitfield seemed genuinely shocked.
"No, no, my dear fellow. I've no feeling in the matter. When I did Bridget the honor to choose her as my wife, she accepted certain responsibilities. Now she repudiates them. But there's no going back in this life. If you break laws, you pay the penalty."
Luke clenched both hands. He said, "You mean that something is going to happen to Bridget? Now understand me, Whitfield.
Nothing is going to happen to Bridget, nor to me. If you attempt anything of that kind, it's the finish. You'd better be careful. I know a good deal about you."
"It's nothing to do with me," said Lord Whitfield. "I'm only the instrument of a higher power. What that power decrees happens."
"I see you believe that," said Luke.
"Because it's the truth. Anyone who goes against me pays the penalty. You and Bridget will be no exception."
Luke said, "That's where you're wrong. However long a run of luck may be, it breaks in the end. Yours is very near breaking now." Lord Whitfield said gently, "My dear young man, you don't know who it is you're talking to. Nothing can touch me, can't it? We'll see. You'd better watch your step, Whitfield." A little ripple of movement passed over the other. His voice had changed when he spoke. "I've been very patient," said Lord Whitfield. "Don't strain my patience too far. Get out of here." "I'm going," said Luke, "as quick as I can. Remember that I've warned you." He turned on his heel and went quickly out of the room. He ran upstairs. He found Bridget in her room, superintending the packing of her clothes by a housemaid. "Ready soon?"
"In 10 minutes."
Her eyes asked a question which the presence of the maid prevented her from putting into words. Luke gave a short nod. He went to his own room and flung his things hurriedly into his suitcase. He returned 10 minutes later to find Bridget ready for departure.
"Shall we go now?"
"I'm ready."
As they descended the staircase, they met the butler ascending.
"Miss Wainfleet has called to see you, miss."
"Miss Wainfleet? Where is she?"
"In the drawing room, with his lordship."
Bridget went straight to the drawing room, Luke close behind her. Lord Whitfield was standing by the window talking to Miss Wainfleet. He had a knife in his hand, a long, slender blade.
"Perfect workmanship," he was saying.
"One of my young men brought it back to me from Morocco, where he'd been special correspondent. It's Moorish, of course. A riff knife."
He drew a finger lovingly along the blade.
"What an edge."
Miss Wainfleet said sharply,
"Put it away, Gordon, for goodness sake."
He smiled and laid it down among a collection of other weapons on a table.
"I like the feel of it," he said softly.
Miss Wainfleet had lost some of her usual poise. She looked white and nervous.
"Ah, there you are, Bridget, my dear," she said.
Lord Whitfield chuckled.
"Yes, there's Bridget. Make the most of her, Honoria. She won't be with us long."
Miss Wainfleet said sharply,
"What do you mean?"
"Mean? I mean she's going to London. That's right, isn't it? That's all I meant."
He looked round at them all.
"I've got a bit of news for you, Honoria," he said. "Bridget isn't going to marry me, after all. She prefers Fitzwilliam here. A queer thing, life. Well, I'll leave you to have your talk."
He went out of the room, his hands jingling the coins in his pockets.
"Oh, dear,"
said Miss Wainfleet.
"Oh, dear."
The deep distress in her voice was so noticeable that Bridget looked slightly surprised. She said uncomfortably,
"I'm sorry. I really am frightfully sorry."
Miss Wainfleet said,
"He's angry. He's frightfully angry. Oh, dear, this is terrible. What are we going to do?"
Bridget stared.
"Do? What do you mean?"
Miss Wainfleet said, including them both in her reproachful glance,
"You should never have told him."
Bridget said,
"Nonsense. What else could we do?" "You shouldn't have told him now. You should have waited till you'd got right away."
Bridget said shortly, "That's a matter of opinion. I think myself it's better to get unpleasant things over as quickly as possible."
"Oh, my dear, if it were only a question of that."
She stopped. Then her eyes asked a question of Luke. Luke shook his head. His lips formed the words, "Not yet." Miss Wainfleet murmured,
"I see."
Bridget said with some slight exasperation,
"Did you want to see me about something in particular, Miss Wainfleet?" "Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I came to suggest that you should come and pay me a little visit. I thought you might find it uncomfortable to remain on here, and that you might want a few days to, mature your plans."
"Oh, thank you, Miss Wainfleet. That was very kind of you. You see, you'd be quite safe with me, and—" Bridget interrupted.
"Safe?"
Miss Wainfleet, a little flustered, said hurriedly,
"Comfortable. That's what I meant, quite comfortable with me. I mean, not nearly so luxurious as here, naturally, but the hot water is hot, and my little maid Emily really cooks quite nicely."
"Oh, I'm sure everything would be lovely, Miss Wainfleet," said Bridget mechanically.
"But, of course, if you're going up to town, that is much better."
Bridget said slowly,
"It's a little awkward. My aunt went off early to a flower show today. I haven't had a chance yet to tell her what has happened. I shall leave a note for her, telling her that I've gone up to the flat.
You're going to your aunt's flat in London?
Yes, there's no one there, but I can go out for meals.
You'll be alone in that flat? Oh, dear, I shouldn't do that. Not stay there alone.
Nobody will eat me, said Bridget impatiently. Besides, my aunt will come up tomorrow. Miss Wainfleet shook her head in a worried manner. Luke said, better go to a hotel. Bridget wheeled round on him.
Why? What's the matter with you all? Why are you treating me as though I were an imbecile child?
No, no, dear, protested Miss Wainfleet. We just want you to be careful, that's all.
But why?
Why? What's it all about? Look here, Bridget, said Luke. I want to have a talk with you, but I can't talk here. Come with me now in the car, and we'll go somewhere quiet. He looked at Miss Wainfleet. May we come to your house in about an hour's time? There are several things I want to say to you.
Please do. I will wait for you there.
Luke put his hand on Bridget's arm. He gave a nod of thanks to Miss Wainfleet. He said, we'll pick up the luggage later. Come on. He led her out of the room and along the hall to the front door. He opened the door of the car. Bridget got in. Luke started the engine and drove rapidly down the drive. He gave a sigh of relief as they emerged from the iron gates.
Thank God I've got you out of there safely, he said. Have you gone quite mad, Luke? Why all this hush-hush, I can't tell you what I mean now business?
Luke said grimly. Well, there are difficulties, you know, in explaining that a man's a murderer when you're actually under his roof. Chapter 20. We're in it together. Bridget sat for a minute, motionless beside him. She said,
Gordon?
Luke nodded.
Gordon? Gordon, a murderer? Gordon, the murderer? I never heard anything so ridiculous in all my life.
Now that's how it strikes you.
Yes, indeed. Why, Gordon wouldn't hurt a fly.
Luke said grimly, That may be true, I don't know, but he's certainly killed a canary bird, and I'm pretty certain he's killed a large number of human beings as well.
My dear Luke, I simply can't believe it.
I know, said Luke. It does sound quite incredible. Why, he never even entered my head as a possible suspect until the night before last.
Bridget protested. But I know all about Gordon. I know what he's like. He's really a sweet little man. Pompous, yes, but rather pathetic, really.
Luke shook his head. You've got to readjust your ideas about him, Bridget.
It's no good, Luke. I simply can't believe it. What put such an absurd idea into your head? Why, 2 days ago you were quite positive it was Ellsworthy.
Luke winced slightly. I know. You probably think that tomorrow I shall suspect Thomas, and the day after that I shall be convinced that it's Horton I'm after. I'm not really so unbalanced as that. I admit the idea is completely startling when it first comes to you, but if you look into it a bit more closely, you'll see that it all fits in remarkably well. No wonder Miss Pinkerton didn't dare go to the local authorities. She knew they'd laugh at her. Scotland Yard was her only hope.
But what possible motive could Gordon have for all this killing business? Oh, it's all so silly.
I know. But don't you realize that Gordon Whitfield has a very exalted opinion of himself? Bridget said, He pretends to be very wonderful and very important.
That's just inferiority complex, poor lamb.
Possibly that's at the root of the trouble. I don't know, but think, Bridget. Just think a minute. Remember all the phrases you've used laughingly yourself about him. Les Majestés, etc. Don't you realize that the man's ego is swollen out of all proportion, and it's allied with religion? My dear girl, the man's as mad as a hatter. Bridget thought for a minute. She said at last,
I still can't believe it.
What evidence have you got, Luke? Well, there are his own words. He told me quite plainly and distinctly the night before last that anyone who opposed him in any way always died.
Go on.
I can't explain to you what I mean, but it was the way he said it, quite calm and complacent and, how shall I put it, quite used to the idea. He just sat there, smiling to himself. It was uncanny and rather horrible, Bridget.
Go on.
Well, then he went on to give me a list of people who'd passed out because they'd incurred his sovereign displeasure. And listen to this, Bridget. The people he mentioned were Mrs. Horton, Amy Gibbs, Tommy Pierce, Harry Carter, Humbleby, and that chauffeur fellow, Rivers.
Bridget was shaken at last. She went very pale.
He mentioned those actual people.
Those actual people. Now do you believe?
Oh, God. I suppose I must. What were his reasons?
Horribly trivial. That's what made it so frightening. Mrs. Horton had snubbed him. Tommy Pierce had done imitations of him and made the gardeners laugh. Harry Carter had abused him. Amy Gibbs had been grossly impertinent. Humbleby had dared to oppose him publicly. Rivers threatened him before me and Miss Wainfleet.
Bridget put her hands to her eyes. Horrible. Quite horrible, she murmured.
I know. Then there's some other outside evidence. The car that ran down Miss Pinkerton in London was a Rolls, and its number was the number of Lord Whitfield's car.
That definitely clinches it, said Bridget slowly.
Yes. The police thought the woman who gave them that number must have made a mistake.
Mistake, indeed.
I can understand that, said Bridget. When it comes to a rich, powerful man like Lord Whitfield, naturally his story is the one to be believed.
Yes. One appreciates Miss Pinkerton's difficulty, Bridget said thoughtfully.
Once or twice she said rather queer things to me, as though she were warning me against something. I didn't understand in the least at the time. I see now.
It all fits in, said Luke. That's the way of it. At first one says, as you said, impossible, and then, once one accepts the idea, everything fits in. The grapes he sent to Mrs. Horton, and she thought the nurses were poisoning her. And that visit of his to the Wellam and Kreutz Institute. Somehow or other, he must have got hold of some culture of germs and infected Humbleby.
I don't see how he managed that. I don't either, but the connection is there. One can't get away from that.
No, as you say, it fits. And of course, he could do things that other people couldn't. I mean, he would be so completely above suspicion.
I think Miss Wainfleet suspected. She mentioned that visit to the Institute, brought it into conversation quite casually, but I believe she hoped I'd act upon it.
She knew then, all along.
She had a very strong suspicion. I think she was handicapped by having once been in love with him.
Bridget nodded.
Yes, that accounts for several things. Gordon told me they'd once been engaged. She wanted, you see, not to believe it was him, but she became more and more sure that it was. She tried to give me hints, but she couldn't bear to do anything outright against him. Women are odd creatures. I think in a way she still cares about him.
Even after he jilted her, she jilted him.
It was rather an ugly story, I'll tell you.
He recounted the short, ugly episode. Bridget stared at him.
Gordon did that?
Yes, even in those days, you see. He can't have been normal.
Bridget shivered and murmured,
All those years ago. All those years ago.
Luke said, He may have got rid of a lot more people than we shall ever know about. It's just the rapid succession of deaths lately that drew attention to him, as though he'd got reckless with success.
Bridget nodded.
She was silent for a minute or two, thinking. Then she asked abruptly, What exactly did Miss Pinkerton say to you, in the train that day? How did she begin?
Luke cast his mind back.
Told me she was going to Scotland Yard. Mentioned the village constable. Said he was a nice fellow, but not up to dealing with murder.
That was the first mention of the word?
Yes.
Go on.
Then she said, You're surprised, I can see. I was myself at first. I really couldn't believe it. I thought I must be imagining things.
And then?
I asked her if she was sure she wasn't imagining things. I mean, and she said, quite placidly,
Oh, no.
I might have been the first time, but not the second, or the third, or the fourth. After that, one knows.
Marvellous, commented Bridget. Go on.
So, of course, I humoured her, said I was sure she was doing the right thing. I was an unbelieving Thomas, if ever there was one.
I know. So easy to be wise after the event. I'd have felt the same,
nice and superior to the poor old dame. How did the conversation go on?
Let me see.
Oh, she mentioned the Abercrombie case, you know, the Welsh poisoner. Said she hadn't really believed that there had been a look, a special look that he gave his victims. but that she believed it now because she had seen it herself. What words did she use exactly?
Luke thought, creasing his brow. She said, still in that nice ladylike voice, "Of course, I didn't really believe that when I read about it, but it's true." And I said, "What's true?" And she said, "The look on a person's face."
And by Jove, Bridget, the way she said that absolutely got me. Her quiet voice and the look on her face, like someone who had really seen something almost too horrible to speak about. "Go on, Luke, tell me everything."
And then she enumerated the victims, Amy Gibbs and Carter, Tommy Pierce, and said that Tommy was a horrid boy and Carter drank, and then she said, "But now, yesterday, it was Dr. Humbleby, and he's such a good man, a really good man." And she said, if she went to Humbleby and told him, he wouldn't believe her, he'd only laugh.
Bridget gave a deep sigh. "I see," she said. "I see."
Luke looked at her. "What is it, Bridget? What are you thinking of?"
"Something Mrs. Humbleby once said. I wondered... No, never mind, go on. What was it she said to you right at the end?"
Luke repeated the words soberly. They had made an impression on him, and he was not likely to forget them. "I'd said it was difficult to get away with a lot of murders." And she answered, "No, no, my dear boy, that's where you're wrong. It's very easy to kill, so long as no one suspects you. And you see, the person in question is just the last person anyone would suspect." He was silent. Bridget said with a shiver,
"Easy to kill. Horribly easy. It's true enough. No wonder those words stuck in your mind, Luke. They'll stick in mine. All my life. A man like Gordon Whitfield. Of course it's easy."
"It's not so easy to bring it home to him," said Luke.
"Don't you think so? I've an idea I can help there."
"Bridget, I forbid you. You can't. One can't just sit back and play safe. I'm in this, Luke. It may be dangerous, yes, I'll admit that, but I've got to play my part. Bridget, I'm in this, Luke. I shall accept Miss Wainfleet's invitation and stay down here. My darling, I implore you. It's dangerous for both of us, I know that. But we're in it, Luke. We're in it together."
Chapter 21. Oh, why do you walk through the fields in gloves? The calm interior of Miss Wainfleet's house was almost an anticlimax after that tense moment in the car. Miss Wainfleet received Bridget's acceptance of her invitation a little doubtfully, hastening, however, to reiterate her offer of hospitality by way of showing that her doubts were due to quite another cause than unwillingness to receive the girl. Luke said, "I really think it will be the best thing, since you are so kind, Miss Wainfleet. I'm staying at the Bells and Motley. I'd rather have Bridget under my eye than up in town. After all, remember what happened there before." Miss Wainfleet said,
"You mean Lavinia Pinkerton?"
"Yes. You would have said, wouldn't you, that anyone would be quite safe in the middle of a crowded city?"
"You mean," said Miss Wainfleet, "that anyone's safety depends principally on the fact that nobody wishes to kill them?"
"Exactly. We've come to depend upon what has been called the goodwill of civilization." Miss Wainfleet nodded her head thoughtfully. Bridget said,
"How long have you known that Gordon was the killer, Miss Wainfleet?"
Miss Wainfleet sighed.
"That is a difficult question to answer, my dear. I suppose that I have been quite sure in my inmost heart for some time, but I did my best not to recognize that belief. You see, I didn't want to believe it, and so I pretended to myself that it was a wicked and monstrous idea on my part."
Luke said bluntly, "Have you ever been afraid for yourself?" Miss Wainfleet considered.
"You mean that if Gordon had suspected that I knew, he would have found some means of getting rid of me?"
"Yes," Miss Wainfleet said gently.
"I have, of course, been alive to that possibility. I tried to be careful of myself, but I do not think that Gordon would have considered me a real menace."
"Why?" Miss Wainfleet flushed a little.
"I don't think that Gordon would ever believe that I would do anything to bring him into danger."
Luke said abruptly,
You went as far, didn't you, as to warn him?
Yes, that is, I did hint to him that it was odd that anyone who displeased him should shortly meet with an accident.
Bridget demanded,
And what did he say?
A worried expression passed over Miss Wainfleet's face.
He didn't react at all in the way I meant. He seemed, really, it's most extraordinary, he seemed pleased. He said, So you've noticed that. He quite preened himself, if I may use that expression.
Well, he's mad, of course, said Luke. Miss Wainfleet agreed eagerly.
Yes, indeed. There isn't any other explanation possible. He's not responsible for his acts.
She laid a hand on Luke's arm.
They won't hang him, will they, Mr. Fitzwilliam?
No. Send him to Broadmoor, I expect. Miss Wainfleet sighed and leaned back.
I'm so glad.
Her eyes rested on Bridget, who was frowning down at the carpet. Luke said, But we're a long way from all that still. I've notified the powers that be, and I can say this much. They're prepared to take the matter seriously, but you must realize that we've got remarkably little evidence to go upon.
We'll get evidence, said Bridget.
Miss Wainfleet looked up at her. There was some quality in her expression that reminded Luke of someone or something that he had seen not long ago. He tried to pin down the elusive memory, but failed. Miss Wainfleet said doubtfully,
You are confident, my dear. Well, perhaps you're right.
Luke said, I'll go along with the car, Bridget, and fetch your things from the manor. Bridget said immediately,
I'll come too.
I'd rather you didn't.
Yes, but I'd rather come.
Luke said irritably, Don't do the mother and child act with me, Bridget. I refuse to be protected by you. Miss Wainfleet murmured,
I really think, Bridget, that it will be quite all right in a car, and in daylight.
Bridget gave a slightly shame-faced laugh.
I'm being rather an idiot. This business gets on one's nerves.
Luke said, Miss Wainfleet protected me home the other night. Come now, Miss Wainfleet, admit it, you did, didn't you? She admitted it, smiling.
You see, Mr. Fitzwilliam, you were so completely unsuspicious, and if Gordon Whitfield had really grasped the fact that you were down here to look into this business, and for no other reason, well, it wasn't very safe. And that's a very lonely lane. Anything might have happened.
Well, I'm alive to the danger now, all right, said Luke grimly. I shan't be caught napping, I can assure you. Miss Wainfleet said anxiously,
Remember, he is very cunning, and much cleverer than you would ever imagine. Really, a most ingenious mind.
I'm forewarned.
Men have courage, one knows that, said Miss Wainfleet, but they are more easily deceived than women.
That's true, said Bridget. Luke said, Seriously, Miss Wainfleet, do you really think that I'm in any danger? Do you think, in film parlance, that Lord Whitfield is really out to get me? Miss Wainfleet hesitated.
I think, she said, that the principal danger is to Bridget. It's her rejection of him that is the supreme insult. I think that after he has dealt with Bridget, he will turn his attention to you. But I think that undoubtedly he will try for her first.
Luke groaned.
I wish to goodness you would go abroad now, at once, Bridget.
Bridget's lips set themselves together.
I'm not going.
Miss Wainfleet sighed.
You're a brave creature, Bridget. I admire you. You'd do the same in my place. Well, perhaps.
Bridget said, her voice dropping to a full, rich note.
Luke and I are in this together.
She went out with him to the door. Luke said, I'll give you a ring from the Bells and Motley when I'm safely out of the lion's den.
Yes, do.
My sweet, don't let's get all het up. Even the most accomplished murderers have to have a little time to mature their plans. I should say we're quite all right for a day or two. Superintendent Battle is coming down from London today. From then on, Whitfield will be under observation.
In fact, everything is okay and we can cut the melodrama.
Luke said gravely, laying a hand on her shoulder, Bridget, my sweet, you will oblige me by not doing anything rash.
Same to you, darling Luke.
He squeezed her shoulder, jumped into the car, and drove off. Bridget returned to the sitting room. Miss Wainfleet was fussing a little, in a gentle, spinsterish manner.
Oh, my dear, your room's not quite ready yet. Emily is seeing to it. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get you a nice cup of tea. It's just what you need after all these upsetting incidents. It's frightfully kind of you, Miss Wainfleet, but I really don't want any.
What Bridget would have liked was a strong cocktail, mainly composed of gin, but she rightly judged that that form of refreshment was not likely to be forthcoming. She disliked tea intensely. It usually gave her indigestion. Miss Wainfleet, however, had decided that tea was what her young guest needed. She bustled out of the room and reappeared about 5 minutes later, her face beaming, carrying a tray on which stood 2 dainty Dresden cups full of a fragrant, steaming beverage.
"Real Lapsang Souchong," said Miss Wainfleet proudly.
Bridget, who disliked China tea even more than Indian, gave a wan smile. At that moment, Emily, a small, clumsy-looking girl with pronounced adenoids, appeared in the doorway and said,
"If you please, miss, did you bead the frill pillowcases?"
Miss Wainfleet hurriedly left the room, and Bridget took advantage of the respite to pour her tea out of the window, narrowly escaping scalding Wonky Poo, who was on the flower bed below. Wonky Poo accepted her apologies, sprang up on the windowsill, and proceeded to wind himself in and out over Bridget's shoulders, purring in an affected manner.
"Handsome," said Bridget, drawing a hand down his back.
Wonky Poo arched his tail and purred with redoubled vigour.
"Nice pussy," said Bridget, tickling his ears.
Miss Wainfleet returned at that minute.
"Oh, dear me," she exclaimed. "Wonky Poo has quite taken to you, hasn't he? He's so standoffish as a rule. Mind his ear, my dear. He's had a bad ear lately, and it's still very painful."
The injunction came too late. Bridget's hand had tweaked the painful ear. Wonky Poo spat at her and retired, a mass of orange offended dignity.
"Oh, dear, has he scratched you?" cried Miss Wainfleet.
"Nothing much," said Bridget, sucking a diagonal scratch on the back of her hand.
"Shall I put some iodine on it?"
"Oh, no, it's quite all right. Don't let's fuss."
Miss Wainfleet seemed a little disappointed. Feeling that she had been ungracious, Bridget said hastily,
"I wonder how long Luke will be. Now, don't worry, my dear. I'm sure Mr. Fitzwilliam is well able to look after himself."
"Oh, Luke's tough, all right."
At that moment, the telephone rang. Bridget hurried to it. Luke's voice spoke.
"Hello, that's you, Bridget. I'm at the Bells and Motley. Could you wait for your traps till after lunch? Because Battle has arrived here. You know who I mean."
"The superintendent man from Scotland Yard."
"Yes, and he wants to have a talk with me right away."
"Well, that's all right by me. Bring my things round after lunch and tell me what he says about it all."
"Right. So long, my sweet."
"So long."
Bridget replaced the receiver and retailed the conversation to Miss Wainfleet. Then she yawned. A feeling of fatigue had succeeded her excitement. Miss Wainfleet noticed it.
"You're tired, my dear. You'd better lie down."
"No, perhaps that would be a bad thing just before lunch. I was just going to take some old clothes to a woman in a cottage not very far away. Quite a pretty walk over the fields. Perhaps you'd care to come with me. We'll just have time before lunch."
Bridget agreed willingly. They went out the back way. Miss Wainfleet wore a straw hat, and to Bridget's amusement, had put on gloves. "We might be going to Bond Street," she thought to herself. Miss Wainfleet chatted pleasantly of various small village matters as they walked. They went across 2 fields, crossed a rough lane, and then took a path leading through a ragged copse. The day was hot, and Bridget found the shade of the trees pleasant. Miss Wainfleet suggested that they should sit down and rest a minute.
"It's really rather oppressively warm today, don't you think? I fancy there must be thunder about."
Bridget acquiesced somewhat sleepily. She lay back against the bank, her eyes half closed, some lines of poetry wandering through her brain. "Oh, why do you walk through the fields in gloves? Oh, fat white woman whom nobody loves." But that wasn't quite right. Miss Wainfleet wasn't fat. She amended the words to fit the case. "Oh, why do you walk through the fields in gloves? Oh, lean grey woman whom nobody loves." Miss Wainfleet broke in upon her thoughts.
"You're very sleepy, dear, aren't you?"
The words were said in a gentle, everyday tone, but something in them jerked Bridget's eyes suddenly open. Miss Wainfleet was leaning forward towards her. Her eyes were eager. Her tongue passed gently over her lips. She repeated her question.
"You're very sleepy, aren't you?"
This time there was no mistaking the definite significance of the tone. A flash passed through Bridget's brain, a lightning flash of comprehension, succeeded by one of contempt at her own density. She had suspected the truth, but it had been no more than a dim suspicion. She had meant working quietly and secretly to make sure, but not for one moment had she realized that anything was to be attempted against herself. She had, she thought, concealed her suspicions entirely, nor would she have dreamt that anything would be contemplated so soon. Fool! 7 times fool! And she thought suddenly, the tea. There was something in the tea. She doesn't know I never drank it. Now's my chance. I must pretend. What stuff was it, I wonder? Poison or just sleeping stuff? She expects me to be sleepy, that's evident. She let her eyelids droop again. In what she hoped was a natural, drowsy voice, she said, I do, frightfully. How funny. I don't know when I felt so sleepy. Miss Wainfleet nodded softly. Bridget watched the older woman narrowly through her almost closed eyes. She thought, I'm a match for her anyway. My muscles are pretty tough. She's a skinny, frail old pussy. But I've got to make her talk. That's it. Make her talk. Miss Wainfleet was smiling. It was not a nice smile. It was sly and not very human. Bridget thought, she's like a goat. God, how like a goat she is. A goat's always been an evil symbol. I see why now. I was right. I was right in that fantastic idea of mine. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. That was the start of it. It's all there. She murmured, and this time her voice held a definite note of apprehension. I don't know what's the matter with me. I feel so queer, so very queer. Miss Wainfleet gave a swift glance round her. The spot was entirely desolate. It was too far from the village for a shout to be heard. There were no houses or cottages near. She began to fumble with the parcel she carried, the parcel that was supposed to contain old clothes. Apparently it did. The paper came apart, revealing a soft, woolly garment, and still those gloved hands fumbled and fumbled. Oh, why do you walk through the fields in gloves? Yes, why? Why gloves? Of course. Of course, the whole thing so beautifully planned. The wrapping fell aside. Carefully, Miss Wainfleet extracted the knife, holding it very carefully so as not to obliterate the fingerprints which were already on it. Where the short, podgy fingers of Lord Whitfield had held it earlier that day in the drawing-room at Ash Manor. The Moorish knife with the sharp blade. Bridget felt slightly sick. She must play for time, yes, and she must make the woman talk, this lean, grey woman whom nobody loved. It ought not to be difficult, not really, because she must want to talk, oh, so badly. And the only person she could ever talk to was someone like Bridget, someone who was going to be silenced forever. Bridget said, in a faint, thick voice, "What's that knife?" And then Miss Wainfleet laughed. It was a horrible laugh. Soft and musical and ladylike and quite inhuman. She said, "It's for you, Bridget. For you. I've hated you, you know, for a very long time." Bridget said, "Because I was going to marry Gordon Whitfield." Miss Wainfleet nodded. "You're clever. You're quite clever. This, you see, will be the crowning proof against him. You'll be found here with your throat cut, and his knife, and his fingerprints on the knife. Clever the way I asked to see it this morning. And then I slipped it into my bag, wrapped in a handkerchief whilst you were upstairs. So easy. But the whole thing has been easy. I would hardly have believed it." Bridget said, still in the thick, muffled voice of a person heavily drugged, "That's because you're so devilishly clever." Miss Wainfleet laughed, her ladylike little laugh again. She said, with a horrible kind of pride, "Yes, I always had brains, even as a girl. But they wouldn't let me do anything. I had to stay at home, doing nothing. And then Gordon,
Just a common bootmaker's son, but he had ambition. I knew he would rise in the world, and he jilted me, all because of that ridiculous business with the bird.
Her hands made a queer gesture, as though she were twisting something. Again a wave of sickness passed over Bridget.
Gordon Rack, daring to jilt me, Colonel Wainfleet's daughter. I swore I'd pay him out for that. I used to think about it night after night. And then we got poorer and poorer. The house had to be sold. He bought it. He came along, patronizing me, offering me a job in my own old home. How I hated him then. But I never showed my feelings. We were taught that as girls. A most valuable training. That, I always think, is where breeding tells.
She was silent a minute. Bridget watched her, hardly daring to breathe lest she should stem the flow of words. Miss Wainfleet went on softly.
All the time, I was thinking and thinking. First of all, I just thought of killing him. That's when I began to read up criminology. Quietly, you know, in the library. And really, I found my reading came in most useful, more than once later. The door of Amy's room, for instance. Turning the key in the lock from the outside with pincers after I'd changed the bottles by her bed. How she snored, that girl. Quite disgusting it was. She paused. Let me see. Where was I?
That gift which Bridget had cultivated, which had charmed Lord Whitfield, the gift of the perfect listener, stood her in good stead now. Honoria Wainfleet might be a homicidal maniac, but she was also something much more common than that. She was a human being who wanted to talk about herself. And with that class of human being, Bridget was well fitted to cope. She said, and her voice had exactly the right invitation in it,
"You meant at first to kill him?" "Yes, but that didn't satisfy me. Much too ordinary. It had to be something better than just killing. Then I got this idea. It just came to me. He should suffer for committing a lot of crimes of which he was quite innocent. He should be a murderer. He should be hanged for my crime. Or else they'd say he was mad and he would be shut up all his life. That might be even better."
She giggled now, a horrible little giggle. Her eyes were light and staring with queer, elongated pupils.
"As I told you, I read a lot of books on crime. I chose my victims carefully. There was not to be too much suspicion at first. You see,"
her voice deepened,
"I enjoyed the killing. That disagreeable woman, Lydia Horton, she'd patronized me. Once she referred to me as an old maid. I was glad when Gordon quarreled with her. Two birds with one stone, I thought. Such fun. Sitting by her bedside and slipping the arsenic in her tea. And then going out and telling the nurse how Mrs. Horton had complained of the bitter taste of Lord Whitfield's grapes. The stupid woman never repeated that, which was such a pity. And then the others. As soon as I heard that Gordon had a grievance against anyone, it was so easy to arrange for an accident. And he was such a fool, such an incredible fool. I made him believe that there was something very special about him, that anyone who went against him suffered. He believed it quite easily. Poor dear Gordon. He'd believe anything. So gullible."
Bridget thought of herself saying to Luke scornfully,
"Gordon, he could believe anything. Easy?
How easy. Poor, pompous, credulous little Gordon. But she must learn more. Easy? This was easy, too. She'd done it as a secretary for years. Quietly encouraged her employers to talk about themselves, and this woman wanted badly to talk, to boast about her own cleverness. Bridget murmured,
"But how did you manage it all? I don't see how you could." "Oh, it was quite easy. It just needed organization. When Amy was discharged from the manor, I engaged her at once. I think the hat paint idea was quite clever. And the door being locked on the inside made me quite safe. But of course I was always safe, because I never had any motive. And you can't suspect anyone of murder if there isn't a motive. Carter was quite easy too. He was lurching about in the fog, and I caught up with him on the footbridge
and gave him a quick push. I'm really very strong, you know. She paused, and the soft, horrible little giggle came again. The whole thing was such fun. I shall never forget Tommy's face when I pushed him off the windowsill that day. He hadn't the least idea. She leaned towards Bridget confidentially. People are really very stupid, you know. I'd never realized that before. Bridget said softly, But then, you're unusually clever.
Yes.
Yes. Perhaps you're right. Bridget said, Dr. Humbleby, that must have been more difficult.
Yes. It was really amazing how that succeeded. It might not have worked, of course. But Gordon had been talking to everybody of his visit to the Wellam and Kreutz Institute, and I thought if I could manage it so that people remembered that visit and connected it afterwards. And Wonky Poo's ear really was very nasty, a lot of discharge. I managed to run the point of my scissors into the doctor's hand. And then I was so distressed and insisted on putting on a dressing and bandaging it up. He didn't know the dressing had been infected first from Wonky Poo's ear. Of course, it mightn't have worked. It was just a long shot. I was delighted when it did, especially as Wonky Poo had been Lavinia's cat. Her face darkened. Lavinia Pinkerton. She guessed. It was she who found Tommy that day. And then when Gordon and old Dr. Humbleby had that row, she caught me looking at Humbleby. I was off my guard. I was just wondering exactly how I'd do it, and she knew. I turned round to find her watching me. I gave myself away. I saw that she knew. She couldn't prove anything, of course I knew that. But I was afraid, all the same, someone might believe her. I was afraid they might believe her at Scotland Yard. I felt sure that was where she was going that day. I was in the same train, and I followed her. The whole thing was so easy. She was on an island, crossing Whitehall. I was close behind her. She never saw me. A big car came along, and I shoved her with all my might. I'm very strong. She went right down in front of it. I told the woman next to me I'd seen the number of the car, and gave her the number of Gordon's rolls. I hoped she'd repeat it to the police. It was lucky the car didn't stop. Some chauffeur, joyriding without his master's knowledge, I suspect. Yes, I was lucky there. I'm always lucky. That scene the other day with Rivers and Luke Fitzwilliam as witness. I've had such fun leading him along. Odd how difficult it was to make him suspect Gordon. But after Rivers' death, he would be sure to do so. He must. And now? Well, this will just finish the whole thing nicely.
She got up and came towards Bridget. She said softly,
Gordon jilted me. He was going to marry you. All my life I've been disappointed. I've had nothing. Nothing at all.
Oh, lean grey woman whom nobody loves. She was bending over her. Smiling with mad light eyes, the knife gleamed. With all her youth and strength, Bridget sprang. Like a tiger cat, she flung herself full force on the other woman, knocking her back, seizing her right wrist. Taken by surprise, Honoria Wainfleet fell back before the onslaught, but then, after a moment's inertia, she began to fight. In strength, there was no comparison between them. Bridget was young and healthy, with muscles toughened by games. Honoria Wainfleet was a slender-built, frail creature. But there was one factor on which Bridget had not reckoned. Honoria Wainfleet was mad. Her strength was the strength of the insane. She fought like a devil, and her insane strength was stronger than the sane muscle strength of Bridget. They swayed to and fro, and still Bridget strove to wrest the knife away from her, and still Honoria Wainfleet hung on to it. And then, little by little, the madwoman's strength began to prevail. Bridget cried out now, Luke, help, help! But she had no hope of help coming. She and Honoria Wainfleet were alone, alone in a dead world. With a supreme effort, she wrenched the other's wrist back, and at last she heard the knife fall.
The next minute, Honoria Wainfleet's two hands had fastened round her neck in a maniac grasp, squeezing the life out of her. She gave one last choked cry.
Chapter 22. Mrs. Humbleby speaks. Luke was favourably impressed by the appearance of Superintendent Battle. He was a solid, comfortable-looking man with a broad red face and a large, handsome moustache. He did not exactly express brilliance at a first glance, but a second glance was apt to make an observant person thoughtful, for Superintendent Battle's eye was unusually shrewd. Luke did not make the mistake of underestimating him. He had met men of Battle's type before. He knew that they could be trusted, and that they invariably got results. He could not have wished for a better man to be put in charge of the case. When they were alone together, Luke said, "You're rather a big noise to be sent down on a case like this." Superintendent Battle smiled. "It may turn out to be a serious business, Mr. Fitzwilliam. When a man like Lord Whitfield is concerned, we don't want to make any mistakes." "I appreciate that. Are you alone?" "Oh, no. Got a detective sergeant with me. He's at the other pub, the Seven Stars, and his job is to keep an eye on his lordship." "I see." Battle asked, "In your opinion, Mr. Fitzwilliam, there's no doubt whatever. You're pretty sure of your man." "On the facts, I don't see that any alternative theory is possible. Do you want me to give you the facts?" "I've had them, thank you, from Sir William." "Well, what do you think? I suppose it seems to you wildly unlikely that a man in Lord Whitfield's position should be a homicidal criminal." "Very few things seem unlikely to me," said Superintendent Battle. "Nothing's impossible in crime. That's what I've always said. If you were to tell me that a dear old maiden lady or an archbishop or a schoolgirl was a dangerous criminal, I wouldn't say no. I'd look into the matter." "If you've heard the main facts of the case from Sir William, I'll just tell you what happened this morning," said Luke. He ran over briefly the main lines of his scene with Lord Whitfield. Superintendent Battle listened with a good deal of interest. He said, "You say he was fingering a knife. Did he make a special point of that knife, Mr. Fitzwilliam? Was he threatening with it?" "Not openly. He tested the edge in a rather nasty way. Kind of aesthetic pleasure about that, that I didn't care about. Miss Wainfleet felt the same, I believe." "That's the lady you spoke about, the one who's known Lord Whitfield all her life and was once engaged to marry him." "That's right." Superintendent Battle said, "I think you can make your mind easy about the young lady, Mr. Fitzwilliam. I'll have someone put on to keep a sharp watch on her. With that, and with Jackson tailing his lordship, there ought to be no danger of anything happening." "You relieve my mind a good deal," said Luke. The superintendent nodded sympathetically. "It's a nasty position for you, Mr. Fitzwilliam, worrying about Miss Conway. Mind you, I don't expect this will be an easy case. Lord Whitfield must be a pretty shrewd man. He will probably lie low for a good long while. That is, unless he's got to the last stage." "What do you call the last stage?" "A kind of swollen egoism where a criminal thinks he simply can't be found out. He's too clever, and everybody else is too stupid. Then, of course, we get him." Luke nodded. He rose. "Well," he said, "I wish you luck. Let me help in any way I can."
"Certainly."
"There's nothing that you can suggest?" Battle turned the question over in his mind.
"I don't think so, not at the moment. I just want to get the general hang of things in the place. Perhaps I could have another word with you in the evening."
"Rather. I shall know better where we are then."
Luke felt vaguely comforted and soothed. Many people had had that feeling after an interview with Superintendent Battle. He glanced at his watch. Should he go round and see Bridget before lunch? Better not, he thought. Miss Wainfleet might feel that she had to ask him to stay for the meal, and it might disorganize her housekeeping. Middle-aged ladies, Luke knew from experience with aunts, were liable to be fussed over problems of housekeeping. He wondered if Miss Wainfleet was an aunt. Probably. He had strolled out to the door of the inn. A figure in black, hurrying down the street, stopped suddenly when she saw him.
"Mr. Fitzwilliam."
"A Mrs. Humbleby."
He came forward and shook hands. She said,
"I thought you had left."
"No, only changed my quarters.
I'm staying here now.
And Bridget? I heard she had left Ash Manor.
Yes, she has. Mrs. Humbleby sighed.
I'm so glad. So very glad she's gone right away from Witchwood.
Oh, she's still here. As a matter of fact, she's staying with Miss Wainfleet.
Mrs. Humbleby moved back a step. Her face, Luke noted with surprise, looked extraordinarily distressed.
Staying with Honoria Wainfleet? Oh, but why?
Miss Wainfleet very kindly asked her to stay for a few days.
Mrs. Humbleby gave a little shiver. She came close to Luke and laid a hand on his arm.
Mr. Fitzwilliam, I have no right to say anything, anything at all. I have had a lot of sorrow and grief lately, and perhaps it makes me fanciful. These feelings of mine may be only sick fancies.
Luke said gently, What feelings?
This conviction I have of evil.
She looked timidly at Luke. Seeing that he merely bowed his head gravely and did not appear to question her statement, she went on,
So much wickedness. That is the thought that is always with me. Wickedness here in Witchwood. And that woman is at the bottom of it all. I'm sure of it.
Luke was mystified. What woman? Mrs. Humbleby said,
Honoria Wainfleet is, I'm sure, a very wicked woman. Oh, I see you don't believe me.
No one believed Lavinia Pinkerton either, but we both felt it.
She, I think, knew more than I did. Remember, Mr. Fitzwilliam, if a woman is not happy, she is capable of terrible things.
Luke said gently, That may be, yes. Mrs. Humbleby said quickly,
You don't believe me. Well, why should you? But I can't forget the day when John came home with his hand bound up from her house, though he pooh-poohed it and said it was only a scratch.
She turned.
Goodbye. Please forget what I have just said. I don't feel quite myself these days.
Luke watched her go. He wondered why Mrs. Humbleby called Honoria Wainfleet a wicked woman. Had Dr. Humbleby and Honoria Wainfleet been friends? And was the doctor's wife jealous? What had she said? Nobody believed Lavinia Pinkerton either. Then Lavinia Pinkerton must have confided some of her suspicions to Mrs. Humbleby. With a rush, the memory of the railway carriage came back, and the worried face of a nice old lady. He heard again an earnest voice saying, The look on a person's face. And the way her own face had changed, as though she was seeing something very clearly in her mind. Just for a moment, he thought, her face had been quite different. The lips drawn back from the teeth and a queer, almost gloating look in her eyes. He suddenly thought, But I've seen someone look just like that. That same expression, quite lately. When? This morning, of course. Miss Wainfleet. When she was looking at Bridget, in the drawing-room, at the manor. And quite suddenly another memory assailed him, one of many years ago, his Aunt Mildred saying, She looked, you know, my dear, quite half-witted. And just for a minute, her own sane, comfortable face had borne an imbecile, mindless expression. Lavinia Pinkerton had been speaking of the look she had seen on a man's, no, a person's face. Was it possible that just for a second her vivid imagination had reproduced the look that she saw, the look of a murderer, looking at his next victim? Half unaware of what he was doing, Luke quickened his pace towards Miss Wainfleet's house. A voice in his brain was saying over and over again, Not a man. She never mentioned a man. You assumed it was a man because you were thinking of a man, but she never said so. Oh, God, am I quite mad? It isn't possible what I'm thinking. Surely it isn't possible, it wouldn't make sense, but I must get to Bridget. I must know she's all right. Those eyes, those queer, light, amber eyes. Oh, I'm mad. I must be mad. Whitfield's the criminal. He must be. He practically said so. And still, like a nightmare, he saw Miss Pinkerton's face in its momentary impersonation of something horrible and not quite sane. The stunted little maid opened the door to him. A little startled by his vehemence, she said,
The lady's gone out. Miss Wainfleet told me so. I'll see if Miss Wainfleet's in.
He pushed past her, went into the drawing room. Emily ran upstairs. She came down breathless.
The mistress is out too.
Luke took her by the shoulder. "Which way? Where did they go?" She gaped at him.
They must have got out by the back. I'd have seen them if they'd got out front ways, because the kitchen looks out there.
She followed him as he raced out through the door, into the tiny garden and out beyond. There was a man clipping a hedge. Luke went up to him and asked a question, striving to keep his voice normal. The man said slowly,
"Two ladies? Yes, some while since. I was having my dinner under the hedge. Reckon they didn't notice me."
"Which way did they go?" He strove desperately to make his voice normal, yet the other's eyes opened a little wider as he replied slowly,
"Across them fields. Over that way. I don't know where after that."
Luke thanked him and began to run. His strong feeling of urgency was deepened. He must catch up with them. He must. He might be quite mad. In all probability, they were just taking an amicable stroll, but something in him clamoured for haste, more haste. He crossed the two fields, stood hesitating in a country lane. Which way now? And then he heard the call. Faint, far away, but unmistakable.
"Luke! Help!"
And again,
"Luke!"
Unerringly, he plunged into the wood and ran in the direction from which the cry had come. There were more sounds now, scuffling, panting, a low, gurgling cry. He came through the trees in time to tear a madwoman's hands from her victim's throat, to hold her, struggling, foaming, cursing, till at last she gave a convulsive shudder and turned rigid in his grasp. Chapter 23. New Beginning.
"But I don't understand," said Lord Whitfield. "I don't understand."
He strove to maintain his dignity, but beneath the pompous exterior, a rather pitiable bewilderment was evident. He could hardly credit the extraordinary things that were being told him.
"It's like this, Lord Whitfield," said Battle patiently. "To begin with, there is a touch of insanity in the family. We've found that out now. Often the way with these old families. I should say she had a predisposition that way. And then she was an ambitious lady, and she was thwarted. First her career, then her love affair." He coughed. "I understand it was you who jilted her," Lord Whitfield said stiffly. "I don't like the term jilt." Superintendent Battle amended the phrase. "It was you who terminated the engagement." "Well, yes."
"Tell us why, Gordon," said Bridget. Lord Whitfield got rather red. He said,
"Oh, very well, if I must. Honoria had a canary. She was very fond of it. It used to take sugar from her lips. One day it pecked her violently instead. She was angry and picked it up and wrung its neck. I couldn't feel the same after that. I told her I thought we'd both made a mistake."
Battle nodded. He said,
"Well, that was the beginning of it. As she told Miss Conway, she turned her thoughts and her undoubted mental ability to one aim and purpose."
Lord Whitfield said incredulously,
"To get me convicted as a murderer? I can't believe it."
Bridget said,
"It's true, Gordon. You know, you were surprised yourself at the extraordinary way that everybody who annoyed you was instantly struck down."
"Well, there was a reason for that."
"Honoria Wainfleet was the reason," said Bridget.
"Do get it into your head, Gordon, that it wasn't Providence that pushed Tommy Pierce out of the window and all the rest of them. It was Honoria."
Lord Whitfield shook his head.
"Oh, it all seems to me quite incredible," he said.
Battle said,
"You say you got a telephone message this morning?"
"Yes, about 12 o'clock. I was asked to go to the Shore Wood at once, as you, Bridget, had something to say to me. I was not to come by car, but to walk."
Battle nodded.
"Exactly, that would have been the finish. Miss Conway would have been found with her throat cut, and beside her your knife with your fingerprints on it, and you yourself would have been seen in the vicinity at the time. You wouldn't have had a leg to stand upon. Any jury in the world would have convicted you."
"Me?"
said Lord Whitfield, startled and distressed.
"Anyone would have believed a thing like that of me?"
Bridget said gently,
"I didn't, Gordon. I never believed it."
Lord Whitfield looked at her coldly. Then he said stiffly,
In view of my character and my standing in the county, I do not believe that anyone for one moment would have believed in such a monstrous charge.
He went out with dignity and closed the door behind him. Luke said, "He'll never realize that he was really in danger." Then he said, "Go on, Bridget. Tell me how you came to suspect the Wainfleet woman." Bridget explained.
"It was when you were telling me that Gordon was the killer. I couldn't believe it, you see. I knew him so well. I'd been his secretary for 2 years. I knew him in and out. I knew that he was pompous and petty and completely self-absorbed, but I knew, too, that he was a kindly person and almost absurdly tender-hearted. It worried him even to kill a wasp. That story about his killing Miss Wainfleet's canary, it was all wrong. He just couldn't have done it. He told me once that he had jilted her. Now you insisted that it was the other way about. Well, that might be so. His pride might not have allowed him to admit that she had thrown him over. But not the canary story. That simply wasn't Gordon. He didn't even shoot because seeing things killed made him feel sick. So I simply knew that that part of the story was untrue. But if so, Miss Wainfleet must have lied. And it was really, when you come to think of it, a very extraordinary lie. And I wondered suddenly if she'd told any more lies. She was a very proud woman, one could see that. To be thrown over must have hurt her pride horribly. It would probably make her feel very angry and revengeful against Lord Whitfield, especially, I felt, if he turned up again later, all rich and prosperous and successful. I thought, yes, she'd probably enjoy helping to fix a crime upon him. And then a curious sort of whirling feeling came in my brain, and I thought, but suppose everything she says is a lie? And I suddenly saw how easily a woman like that could make a fool of a man. And I thought, it's fantastic, but suppose it was she who killed all those people and fed Gordon up with the idea that it was a kind of divine retribution. It would be quite easy for her to make him believe that. As I told you once, Gordon would believe anything. And I thought, could she have done all those murders? And I saw that she could. She could give a shove to a drunken man and push a boy out of a window. And Amy Gibbs had died in her house. Mrs. Horton, too. Honoria Wainfleet used to go and sit with her when she was ill. Dr. Humbleby was more difficult. I didn't know then that Wonky Pooh had a nasty septic ear and that she infected the dressing she put on his hand. Miss Pinkerton's death was even more difficult, because I couldn't imagine Miss Wainfleet dressed up as a chauffeur driving a Rolls, and then suddenly I saw that that was the easiest of the lot. It was the old shove from behind, easily done in a crowd. The car didn't stop, and she saw a fresh opportunity and told another woman she had seen the number of the car and gave the number of Lord Whitfield's Rolls. Of course, all this only came very confusedly through my head, but if Gordon definitely hadn't done the murders, and I knew, yes, I knew that he hadn't, well then who had? And the answer seemed quite clear. Someone who hates Gordon. Who hates Gordon? Honoria Wainfleet, of course. And then I remembered that Miss Pinkerton had definitely spoken of a man as the killer. That knocked out all my beautiful theory, because unless Miss Pinkerton was right, she wouldn't have been killed. So, I got you to repeat exactly Miss Pinkerton's words, and I soon discovered that she hadn't actually said man once. Then I felt that I was definitely on the right track. I decided to accept Miss Wainfleet's invitation to stay with her, and I resolved to try to ferret out the truth.
Without saying a word to me, said Luke angrily.
But my sweet, you were so sure. And I wasn't sure a bit. It was all vague and doubtful. But I never dreamed that I was in any danger. I thought I'd have plenty of time.
She shivered.
Oh, Luke, it was horrible. Her eyes. And that dreadful, polite, inhuman laugh.
Luke said, with a slight shiver, I shan't forget how I only just got there in time. He turned to Battle. What's she like now?
Gone right over the edge, said Battle. They do, you know. They can't face the shock of not having been as clever as they thought they were.
Luke said ruefully,
Well, I'm not much of a policeman. I never suspected Honoria Wainfleet once. You'd have done better, Battle.
Maybe, sir, maybe not. You'll remember my saying that nothing's impossible in crime. I mentioned a maiden lady, I believe. You also mentioned an archbishop and a schoolgirl. Am I to understand that you consider all these people as potential criminals?
Battle's smile broadened to a grin.
Anyone may be a criminal, sir. That's what I meant.
Except Gordon, said Bridget. Luke, let's go and find him.
They found Lord Whitfield in his study, busily making notes.
Gordon, said Bridget, in a small, meek voice. Please, now that you know everything, will you forgive us?
Lord Whitfield looked at her graciously.
Certainly, my dear. Certainly. I realize the truth. I was a busy man. I neglected you. The truth of the matter is, as Kipling so wisely puts it, he travels the fastest who travels alone. My path in life is a lonely one.
He squared his shoulders.
I carry a big responsibility. I must carry it alone. For me, there can be no companionship, no easing of the burden. I must go through life alone, till I drop by the wayside.
Bridget said, Dear Gordon, you really are sweet.
Lord Whitfield frowned.
It is not a question of being sweet. Let us forget all this nonsense. I am a busy man.
I know you are.
I am arranging for a series of articles to start at once. Crimes committed by women through the ages.
Bridget gazed at him with admiration.
Gordon, I think that's a wonderful idea.
Lord Whitfield puffed out his chest.
So, please, leave me now. I must not be disturbed. I have a lot of work to get through.
Luke and Bridget tiptoed from the room.
But he really is sweet, said Bridget.
Bridget, I believe you were really fond of that man.
Do you know, Luke? I believe I was.
Luke looked out of the window.
I'll be glad to get away from Wychwood. I don't like this place. There's a lot of wickedness here, as Mrs. Humbleby would say. I don't like the way Ash Ridge broods over the village.
Talking of Ash Ridge, what about Ellsworthy?
Luke laughed a little shamefacedly.
That blood on his hands?
Yes.
They'd sacrificed a white cock, apparently.
How perfectly disgusting.
I think something unpleasant is going to happen to our Mr. Ellsworthy. Battle is planning a little surprise.
Bridget said, And poor Major Horton never even attempted to kill his wife. And Mr. Abbott, I suppose, just had a compromising letter from a lady. And Dr. Thomas is just a nice, unassuming young doctor.
He's a superior ass.
Well, you say that because you're jealous of his marrying Rose Humbleby.
Well, she's much too good for him.
I always have felt you liked that girl better than me.
Darling, aren't you being rather absurd?
No.
Not really.
She was silent a minute and then said, Luke, do you like me now?
He made a movement towards her, but she warded him off.
I said like, Luke, not love.
Oh, I see. Yes, I do. I like you, Bridget, as well as loving you.
Bridget said, I like you, Luke.
They smiled at each other, a little timidly, like children who have made friends at a party.
Bridget said, Liking is more important than loving. It lasts. I want what is between us to last, Luke. I don't want us just to love each other and marry and get tired of each other and then want to marry someone else.
Oh, my dear love, I know. You want reality.
So do I. What's between us will last forever. Because it's founded on reality.
Is that true, Luke?
It's true, my sweet. That's why I think I was afraid of loving you.
I was afraid of loving you, too.
Are you afraid now?
No.
He said, We've been close to death for a long time. Now that's over. Now we'll begin to live.
We hope you have enjoyed Murder is Easy by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser. Murder is Easy, text copyright 1939, Agatha Christie Limited. Production copyright 2004, HarperCollins Publishers Limited. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.